All right, so Todd, here's my theory. I kind of figure there's three kinds of people.
Okay.
There's the people who read and love comics.
Right.
There's the people who can't stand comics.
Right.
And there's the people who read them but don't admit it in public. But that middle section is shrinking, and many of them are moving into that first category today.
I just did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're one of them. Today through Sunday, tens of thousands of people will descend onto San Diego. It's the 41st annual Comic-Con International Convention, the largest gathering of its kind in the world. It began as truly a gathering of nerds, honestly, and I'm a person who's loved comic books since being a child, so that's not a derogatory term. And it went from that to really a premier pop culture event that the geeks can barely even get tickets for Comic-Con anymore. Stars like Tim Burton, Johnny Depp, Angelina Jolie strolling down the aisles and touting their new projects. But lest you still think Comic-Con and comic books are just for nerds, Gerard Jones says, Gerard is the author of Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and the Birth of the Comic Book, and he has a new comic book that he's launching at Comic-Con, Networked, Carebella on the Run. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've been going to Comic-Con for 27 years.
Yes, which is a huge number. I hadn't added it up until I was asked to say, when have I started going to this thing? And yeah, it's been a long time.
So you've seen this change that I'm talking about.
Yeah, when I started going to this thing, it was maybe 20,000 people at the most, and it was definitely very heavily comic book focused. Now it's, 140,000? And I would be surprised if as many as one out of four people there actually had much interest in comic books per se. It's very much a movie and TV launching pad, and also for a place for video games and toys and everything that sort of comes out of this comic book nucleus.
Well, right. You used to have people who would go in there and ooh and ah over the number one issue of Swamp Thing, right? I mean, people who were true comic book enthusiasts.
And they're still out there. You can find them. But it's just one of the running jokes, though, is that in this gigantic dealer's house, the entire convention center just opened up, and it's full of tables and booths and promotional areas. But one of the jokes is that the quietest area is the place where the old comics are sold. There's so few people there. It's the one place you can breathe and stop for a minute.
Well, why is the rest of the world kind of investing? Why are pop culture enthusiasts investing in Comic-Con? Why is Hollywood there? Why are economists there and CEOs?
Yeah, well, a large part of it, it's been said with tongue partly in cheek that comics are the research and development department for Hollywood. Not only are there all these specific, shows specifically pulled out of comic books like Iron Man and Batman, both movies and TV shows, but the comic book style of storytelling has just sort of flowed out and infused mainstream Hollywood entertainment and storytelling. The writing crew of Lost, for example, was largely pulled from the comic book business. So it's these ideas, ways of hooking audiences, ways of telling stories that begin often in comics and flow out from there. So even though the comics themselves don't sell very well, as objects, the ripples they send out on the pop culture pond are pretty significant.
Well, Gerard, I'm a person who moved from Category 2 in Celeste's listing of the human race from people who couldn't stand comics into people who actually love them. Now, I'm starting to love them because I just got exposed to why The Last Man series. I plowed through it, and I might be wrong, but I feel like I haven't changed. I feel like comics have changed, that things like The Last Man, which is so interesting and well done, didn't really exist when I was a kid. Was I just missing them, or have comics changed as well?
They've changed hugely. There was a big shift starting around 1980, but sort of flowing all the way through the 80s and into the 90s, in which the audience for comics, the little kids sort of stopped reading them, and people, mostly male but not entirely, in their 20s and 30s began to sort of stick with comics they had been into before, and the comics kind of grew up along with them. So you get this extremely complicated storytelling, interesting ideas, very clever cinematic ways of doing things as opposed to just the old sort of picture book style. It's a whole different medium from what it was 30 years ago.
Well, one of the things that one of the panels that you're talking about is about the origin of comics, and I want you to tell me about that in terms of how this came out of the Jewish neighborhoods and Depression era Jews. But it kind of connects to the really terrific book that you wrote called Killing Monsters, in that you feel, it seems, that comic books are an empowerment kind of literature, that they empower the person that reads them. And I'm wondering if perhaps that's part of the new fascination with comic books, that as the comic books kind of grow up, adults are finding that this is a form of literature that they can come away from feeling good about themselves.
I think to a large extent, yeah. I mean, from the start, all these characters, Superman, Batman, the sort of, you know, superhero core of comics, were created by the sons of Jewish immigrants. I mean, these people who are still sort of between worlds and use the superhero as a symbol of their otherness, the challenges of the dual identity of the immigrant, and then that desire to be more potent, to be more powerful. And I think that's one of the things that appealed to kids so much. And I think as a culture, we are much more open now to the fantastic. We're much less literal. I think this has a lot to do with being in the electronic era, the web era, the sense that there aren't such firm boundaries around reality. So I think one of the things that's happening is we're all, to some extent, plugging into these more fantastical, bigger-than-life realities. And comics, whether as something you sit and read or as the source of something that you watch on TV or go to the movies to watch, have that quality. They get inside our fantasies and put our fantasies out where we can see them in ways that traditional genres and traditional media just don't.
And they also give us this kind of message that everyone has their own superpower somewhere inside them, right? Like we're all special, and maybe we haven't discovered it.
Yeah, they're very much. I mean, of course, not all comics are superhero stories.
Yeah.
But that is sort of the essential comic book contribution is the superhero story. And yeah, it's basically a metaphor for us having individual power. And I think as we become a little, you know, increasingly individuated, and the world is more and more about us sort of making up our own paths and creating the structure and the texture of our own lives, that's a powerful metaphor. That's a powerful story to hear, that we're special. We have particular conflicts we have to go through, have to pull on a tremendous range of individual powers and abilities to deal with them. Something that kids growing up have always been able to respond to, but I think it's a little more relevant to adult life these days.
Well, Gerard Jones, you are actually at Comic-Con in San Diego right now. Last year it was all about Twilight and that promotion. What is the big story at Comic-Con this year?
You know, I'm still watching. It doesn't seem to be one dominant thing. It's just sort of this tremendous, this display of all the bounty of American pop culture right now, watching to see what emerges, if anything emerges, as this year's one big craze.
Okay, Gerard Jones is the author of Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and the Birth of the Comic Book. He's a presenter at this year's Comic-Con in San Diego, California.
Well, the comics industry is not all it seems to be anymore, and that's sort of what we're talking about today. Things are more complicated than they seem. We've got a little experiment going on with you. You know, in the world of politics, things are always more complicated than the political bumper sticker, but we want to know what your favorite political bumper stickers are. Text us at 69866. When you see a bumper sticker on the road, we want to know some of your favorites.
And then you can head over to our site, thetakeaway.org, weigh in on the slogans that we've already collected there. I'm Celeste Headley.
I'm Todd Zwillick, and for John Hockenberry, it's The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.